To the Business Networking Show with Linda Cloak, John Turner and Jill Russell. At Absolute Protection Group, we specialise in domestic, commercial and industrial electrical, fire and security systems, ensuring the highest quality of service and safety for all your needs. Let us be your trusted partner. Contact us today for a consultation, as if you want protection, you want Absolute Protection. Go to absolute-group.co.uk or call 01622 437838.
Hello? Can anybody hear me?
Advertising your business can sometimes feel like you're trapped down a well, waiting for someone to respond. Choosing to market your business with fuzzy logic, you won't just be heard, you'll be seen. We offer websites, social media and content creation packages that are fully bespoke to you and your business. And the best thing about it, we're affordable. So stop hiding and boost your digital presence using the power of fuzzy logic. Visit www.fuzzy.studio for more information.
Good morning, everyone. It's 11 a.m, I believe, and I'm Linda Cloak from Synergy Networking Events, and I have three lovely guests here with me today. The first of our guests is going to be Peter Smith from PJJS. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you.
And I will just introduce the ladies that are here. So we've got Rachel Constant-Taylor. Hello.
Hello.
And Sandra Iyer.
Hi, Linda.
So we'll be speaking to them a bit later, but we're going to go to Peter first because the girls want to see how he does before they take that step. And we've got a thumbs up from Paul Andrews. Thank you, Paul. It's always good to know I've turned the speakers up. So let's start then with you, Peter. So when did you start PJJS?
Okay, so September 1979.
Wow.
So over 40-odd years. Yeah, okay. Quite a long time.
Okay, and do you, obviously you must enjoy it.
Yeah, so much so, yes, definitely.
And what are the services that PJJS provides?
Okay, so our core business is to do with block and estate management, and we do residential lettings as well. So that encompasses all the properties, anything from ground upwards.
Okay.
So many years ago, we got involved with the contaminated sites. So those are the sites that we used to go and develop, and that was based on Midland Bank. And anything to do with contaminated sites, they would actually push away. So we actually got involved. Did all the contaminated results, and then we would redevelop. So, yeah, so it took us back many years.
So what does – I don't even know what that means, do you? What does contaminated
anything site with carcinogenics, anything with any contaminated sites. So anything, oil, gas, anything that stays on the top. So even petrol stations where they have fuel tanks in the ground and they leak. And they can cause major damages. And we've had a various site years ago where it contaminated, I think, about 30 properties adjacent to the petrol station. So we had Midland Bank callers, and we went, I think it was Preston, to be perfectly honest, and we actually went along and checked all the estates around, and particularly the one we were looking at. So there's several properties which were contaminated. So they actually had to vacate the properties. Because things like gas pipes, lines going into the houses were all rotting.
And what types of, I mean, who would give you that referral? Would it be a building site person?
I actually came from the surveyors who actually went along to the properties at the beginning and immediately mentioned contamination. They called us in to actually investigate.
Wow.
So that started off in the development side. So we then went into doing new builds. And then we've now moved into estate and block management.
And what does that actually mean?
Right. So, okay, if you look after the estate itself, people have to look at insurances, which we manage on their behalf, the gardening, and because everybody now who has communal land requires gardeners. And the what happens then, the developers will actually move it on to people like ourselves to manage. So the developers have created, and it's something to do where you, when you buy an old house, you'll have a back garden. And we all enjoy the back garden. But when you have communal land because of the big development sites, they then want management companies to come in to manage that estate.
Yeah, funnily enough, I mean, I bought a new house, as you know, because you came and did the survey on that for me. But they had a problem. So I remember I was going to buy it, and they right the path comes from the front door. All the houses had two like slabs either side, and the path going down the middle. But right at the end of mine in the road were two massive drains. And I remember saying to the developers, who designed this with two drains? You know, I mean, even if it's a man moving in there, but with a woman wearing heels, you know, the likelihood of falling down the drain. So what they did was I wasn't allowed to move in because the path belonged to me. But because they had to move the slab away so I wasn't walking out onto the drains, because they had to move it, they had to change all the deeds and everything to reflect that I owned the path and the path had moved, which was bizarre. And also I'm not meant to do my front garden. And there was lawn there, and I decided I didn't like lawn because it was just all scrappy and weedy. So I put stones there, and I was actually told off, although I didn't have to put it back to how it was. And I'm sure a lot of them do make you do that, don't they?
Yeah, effectively, when you go to a new development, there are various conditions, such as front lawns. You're not allowed to recreate your front lawn. That's down to the estate management. And then sometimes if there are conditions with your estate, they actually impose even the colour of your front of the house.
Yeah, we can't paint our front door. It's got to be black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so there are conditions. So when you buy a new house, please check your conditions to make sure when you're buying, it is what you want to buy.
The other thing, I think, you think you're buying a house and I didn't have many choices, to be honest, but, you know, when I bought mine, I was really surprised to see it was a 125-year lease, which is what they're doing with a lot of new homes now, aren't they?
They're beginning to change that. The government has brought in, where houses, particularly houses, are changing their lease criteria to freehold. So that criteria is going to take place. And I think it's possibly within this year or next year.
So what about the people already in houses? That's done.
Well, again, that's retrospective. But they will, all new properties will be freehold rather than leasehold. So they will look at that going forward. Same with flats, because flats sometimes are on 99-year leases. And when you think, if you're living there 30 years, all of a sudden it comes down to 60 years. People don't want to buy it anymore because they can't even get a mortgage because it's below 60 years or 60-year period. People want longevity. And if you go to Germany, they will lend you a mortgage for 75 years. So it's not just you, it's your generation after you who live there.
Oh, wow. That's good, isn't it? So they've thought it through.
Many years ago.
Yes. How lovely to have a government that does that, eh? Wait, we won't go there. So what about, what types of people do you find? You've often said to me that it's your customers that find, you know, referrals and things for you. That's where you get new block management sites. But when do you find it's the best time that people come to you? Is it when they've got problems with their managing agent and maybe the gardens aren't being done properly, or, you know, think other things that you have to manage aren't being done? Do they then come to you?
I think generally, we don't advertise, and we should do, effectively, but we don't physically. It's when people, possibly after 3, 4, 5 years, want to change a management, or there are issues with the management company. They're not having, when they have a service charge, which gives them criteria like the gardening, everything else that goes with it, and that's not happening, then these people start to complain. And they will then look around for other estate managers who will then look after their service charge and the criteria, because if the gardening is not being done, then they need proper service.
So is it when you say it's the homeowners, is it like a little consortium that get together that decide who's the managing agent?
So all our estates will have like a committee. Okay. That committee is made up of chairman, treasurer, secretary. They are the people who will, on behalf of all the residents, and quite often, many of the residents don't get involved. And that's the truth. Because they turn up, go to work during the day, come back home at night and close the door. Don't get involved. Whereas the select few, like the chairman, secretary, treasurer, get involved. And they are the people who turn around and say, the service charge is not providing us with what we want. They will then go outside for other estate managers to manage their estate. And that's happened quite a few times.
Mm. So you are a member of Synergy.
Yes.
You're one of the ones I have to chase constantly. So,
right.
So, what do you find useful about coming networking? What? How does it help your business?
I think mainly because of the trades I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So quite often we always want to try and have a minimum of three trades of each discipline. So three plumbers, three electricians, three gardeners. Because if one is busy, and quite often if they're self-employed, they are always busy. Then you go to the next one or the one after that, because the leaseholder is very upset if you don't react to them within 24 hours to say, I've got a leak, because they need attention.
Mm.
So if we can't find somebody straight away, we go on to someone else. So we do generally require. So when I come to Synergy, I ask the very question, can they assist us with these trades?
Mm. And you've got quite a few staff, haven't you? They all work from home.
Well, because we used to have a very large office complex, which I think you've seen many years ago, because of COVID, we actually had to all work from home.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we were all set up with computers, printers and everything. Then we had to go back into the office. Then we went back home again. I think that was over the Christmas period, if you remember.
Mm.
But then we all sat down and said, how much is this office actually costing us?
Mm.
And it was phenomenal. We didn't realise. But they were saying, but we could work from home, providing you trust us, and we're working well, and majority of the staff are working very well, then we don't have an issue. So we do work from home, but primarily we meet once a week, and we have a team meeting, we go through all our requirements for the week, we look at what actions we require, and what, you know, what's the next step to take it forward.
Mm.
And then we go off and do our duties for the week.
So I mean, that's really good flexible working, because you've listened to your team and you've followed through on what they've said and you've got rid of the office. That's your field, isn't it, really?
Yes, it is. And it's interesting to see that it works so beautifully in certain sectors, whilst in other sectors, employers are struggling to implement flexible working requests. And of course, now with the law becoming even more stringent, whereby an employer has to make all reasonable, or have taken all reasonable steps to make flexible working a possibility. When you think of sectors like care, when you think of schools, especially those that are quite regulated, it is quite a challenge to implement flexible working requests. And we're seeing quite a lot of those come through the door. And yes, I think as long as you can demonstrate that you have taken all reasonable steps to go through the eight areas that the law requires every employer to look into before either refusing or accepting a flexible working request, you should be fine. But the one thing I will always say to any employer or any business out there is please ensure that you keep an audit trail of what has been agreed with your staff. A lot of times when things come to people like me, to HR consultants like me to problem solve or for damage limitation, we find that conversations have happened, agreements have been in place, but most of them are verbal. And this is where we, this is why, you know, I think getting in there early and ensuring that you've got the right paperwork in place, the right audit trail, really can sort of hold you in good stead.
If I could add to that point, I mean, it's a very good point. We actually did change our contracts from working, because we said these are the locations within a 25-mile radius. We then changed the contracts to show that it actually reflects flexible working and working from home.
Mm. That's really good. Go on then.
Can I just ask you, since you've been working from home, have you recruited new staff?
Actually, a very good question. I do need a new block and estate manager.
Oh.
So we are looking now for somebody who has a little bit of background in terms of property, Section 20 notices and so on. So we are actually now looking to recruit a new person. But no, everybody we had before are still working for us.
Ah, because I was just wondering, because I've found as a recruiter that when I have an advert out and I say that it's work from home, it's ridiculously more popular than when it's office-based. So I wondered if you'd found the same. But I have found lots of my clients where they did work remotely, but now they've gone back and maybe a more hybrid, which I think is possibly the happy point, although you've still got the cost of the office, is that they've lost some collaboration. Now, obviously, if that's with your existing team, you've built up that trust and that relationship over the years, so then it's easy to work remote. But sometimes it's more difficult when you're bringing a new person in. And I have found recently that some candidates, okay, IT, but they've been saying to me, I'm getting a bit lonely. I thought this was the dream, working remotely. Mm. But actually, I want to come into an office. I want to see people. And I'm not seeing people outside. Mm. And just want, I don't know, it sounds a bit cheesy, but the water cooler talk, you know, and that kind of bonding outside of there. I just wondered if you found that. But if it's an existing team, maybe that hasn't been an issue for you.
That's a very good point. I think besides the existing team, in a way, my team are very fortunate because they have partners who also work at home.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not on their own. And we have had somebody join us a few years ago who were on their own. And after a while, they were saying, yeah, I'd like to meet people. And I said, well, you know, you are meeting us on a Monday, talking through everything. But the rest of the week, they were beginning to feel quite lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually have left us.
Oh, yeah. Right. Interesting.
So it does happen. It works both ways. But primarily, most of our staff do have partners at home or they're working and they're more than happy to continue.
Mental health is a real big thing at the moment, isn't it? That's why I think the hybrid probably works well, because they're not under so much pressure as going into the office every day. They have some time at home and then they're not suffering with the loneliness as well, because they've got the hybrid situations. So they are doing a bit of, you know, meeting up with their colleagues. And I think, Thackeray Williams have seemed to have it right when they talk about, because what they do is they have like team days where certain teams have to go in for 2 days, but then they work from home the rest of the week. And they're the only company I know that I mean, you might know more that do it.
I was just going to say, we have a few clients for whom flexible working has worked because there is a hybrid arrangement in place. And particularly, there is more of a support system in place for anybody who is in their first 2 years of employment, because that can be quite sort of isolating. If you've just joined a company and you've been left to your own accords, you know, just stay at home and work out of your laptop, they tend to buddy them up with a more experienced worker. And the other thing that's more, because most of our clients are small business owners, the other thing that our clients tend to do is to involve staff in networking activities. So it's not just about going and meeting clients. It's not just about meeting your colleagues. They involve them in networking because there is no better ambassador for your business than your own employee going out there and talking about it. And it almost kind of builds a sense of ownership and pride for the brand, and helps to build confidence. So that's another area where employers, our clients, tend to get their staff involved. And not to mention, they will always come together at least once a week, if not twice. Most clients do it twice a week. Some do it once a week. They will all meet up once a week. Like you said, Peter, you know, at the very beginning, to discuss what your objectives are for the coming week, what your priorities are, and go away and then do it together.
I mean, we're actually launching morning clubs now. So we launch in Kings Hill with a 10:30 club. It's going to be our Kings Hill corporate club. And we've already found that a lot of team members are booking into that rather than sole traders, which is really interesting. And that, I think that's just because it's 10:30 in the morning. And the reason we did it is because we felt that a lot of the bigger companies were missing out on our style of networking, because we do only do it in the evening. So therefore, we felt the Kings Hill would be really good, and it's a good area. So we're there now on the first Thursday of every month. So that's really exciting going forward. Did you have a comment, Rachel?
Yeah, I was just going to say, in fact, that's when I started networking, because due to COVID, I was working remotely. And I see people all day, probably too much because almost every meeting's on Teams or Zoom. But I wasn't seeing people in person, face to face, and there was something missing. So I started doing networking, not for the business, but to see people in the flesh. And it really helped. It really helped that kind of isolation, even though I've got a very busy household. And then obviously you've got the other benefits of networking, that an increased business and everything that comes with it. Mm. So I think that's a hidden benefit to what you do that people probably don't realise.
Yeah, I think there's loads of things that people don't realise that networking gives them. I mean, confidence is a massive one, but there's loads of others, aren't there? I mean, what have you found, Peter?
I think with the networking, it's, as I said, as I mentioned to you earlier on about picking up trades, talking to people, and understanding how they work because, you know, trades change. One of your clients previously, pest control,
mm-hmm.
we actually spoke to them, how they change their criteria, how they put down their rat poison and how the criteria with that changes. Instead of putting the boxes down on a regular basis, they put them down possibly once, go back and inspect. So talking to people, there was a guy called Sams, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot of our environmental work in terms of damp. Everybody this time of year suffers from damp, mold, and we need to have full investigation. It's all to do with ventilation.
Mm-hmm.
And how many tenants do not work through damp or mold? And we try and get them to physically understand it's all to do with ventilation. Open windows,
mm-hmm.
get ventilation through.
And this time of year, they don't want to open windows. I mean, I open my windows quite a lot, but people don't want to open windows, do they?
Particularly when you have new tenants moving in. Mm. And we often get phone calls saying, my windowsill is very damp, it's mouldy.
Mm.
It's nothing to do with the window, it's to do with ventilation.
Mm.
But we have to then go and inspect, check it all out, then send them a report. And even then, they turn around and say, oh, no, it's nothing to do with those. It's just to do with the fabric of the building.
So, Peter, what other services do you provide? Because, you know, I know you offer quite different services and I think it's good to let people know before we sort of move on, what other services does your business provide?
Well, on our lettings side, lettings mm-hmm. and sales,
mm-hmm.
we do provide valuations if people need any valuations for properties.
Mm-hmm.
So we can do that. It's very easy to do. We are using one of the major platforms to promote properties, and we're looking after one of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we get so many hits, not necessarily inquiries at this stage, possibly because the budget.
Mm.
But yes, so we provide a lot of services on the letting side. So we have quite a few clients. But again, it's purely Kent.
Okay. And I mean, how will you go about getting this new team member, and what sort of qualities do you want them to have to be able to fit in with the rest of the team?
But again, they've got to be fairly flexible. Mm-hmm. We do meet up, and quite often we have a schedule of what sites they should go to visit, when they're supposed to be visiting them, and they've got to prepare reports. So it's got to be more technical rather than, primary issues. But if they are very technical, let me rephrase that. Rather than being highly technical,
mm-hmm.
we'd rather them look at the property industry, and they need things like Section 20 notices.
Mm-hmm.
That's to do with developing an estate. Because if you, and it's something possibly you know about this, when you look at a property in terms of leasehold, the 2002 Act, you're only allowed to spend up to £250 in their service charge per year. If you exceed that amount, so if they go in and ask you to do work and the work exceeds, say, £1,000 or £2,000, you're exceeding their financial limit. And they could actually sue you and not pay that amount. So Section 20 notice is issued so that we can then provide that work and actually notify them, let them see the costs, which we genuinely do. They get to see all the quotes, and then we issue the Section 20 notice to say these are the works we want to carry out.
Mm.
We then supervise those works, and then at the end of it, we go and inspect to make sure the work's being carried out and it's cost effective. So little things like that, and that's why the block and estate manager, I think, would be very useful.
So will you use a recruitment company?
Yeah, we will.
Okay.
In fact, I've gone to...
So, yeah. He's just sworn at Rachel.
We'll have a chat later.
I'm going to kick him.
You're right, Close. Kick him under the table, yeah. Thank you so much, Peter. How can people get hold of you if they want to know more, if they need a new block management agent, or if they've got a property to let? How would they get hold of you?
Please visit our website, pjjs.co.uk.
Nice, easy website. Yep. Wow. I mean, I looked at our web address the other day and I thought, why didn't I just call it SNE? What made me call it Synergy Networking Events? It's so long to type in.
But yeah, no, seriously, pjjs.co.uk.
Oh, nice and easy. Yeah. Thank you, Peter. Is there anything else before we move on that you want to tell everyone?
Not really.
Okay. Okay, fantastic. Well, before we do go on to Rachel, I'd just like to run through a couple of things that we've got going on. So we've actually got our event, which is in aid of holding on, letting go this evening. And that's at the beautiful Crescent Turner Hotel in Whitstable. We're actually holding the event in the teepee. And I have to say, our members have been so, so generous with prizes. So I'm just going to read out a few of the prizes that we've got in Whitstable this evening. So Bethany Nightingale, who is actually going to be running the CT franchise going forward, she's donated a 1 hour focused mind session. So that's really fantastic. Jason Sutton of Evolution Workwear has donated £200 of branded workwear to both the Maidstone and the Whitstable event. So that's like, you know, it's £400 worth of stuff, which is fantastic. Stephen from Dynamics IT has given us an iPad worth £300. So people are only having to pay £20 to hit the punch wall. So anyone who's coming tonight, just some of the stuff is lovely. Michelle Pope, our pest control lady, she has given a £50 voucher towards pest control. We've got other prizes from Charlie Lee, Steph Nicholson. Ross Friday has given us three prizes. Alison Whelan of Bags Are Packed Travel has given us a double supercar blast driving experience. I mean, hey, that's absolutely fantastic. And then we've had new gifts come in. So we've got gifts from Emma Gillam. She's given us £40 for the Whitstable Sandwich Company. And, you know, lots of different prizes. So absolutely thrilled with those prizes. And then we've actually got prizes as well for Maidstone. So Sally Marshall of Steer Your Business, she's given us an £800 full-page advert, which is an amazing prize someone's going to get for hitting a hole for £20. So really good. Matt Robinson, he's not a member, he's a guest at the event from First Gear Motor Group. He's given us a £50 spa voucher. And James Hawkins has given us 1 month's social media. We've got a basket of biscuits from 21 Century Flooring. Jan Alexandra's given us essential oils. We've got things from Hazel Hall, Chapel Down Wine. So we've got some really amazing gifts and I'll be reading out more of them later on. So also, I just wanted to tell you about the events we've got coming up as well. So we've got the one tonight, obviously, is fully booked. But we do have net walking on Friday going from Moat Park. And our net walking is very different, as are our other events, from other types of net walking events, because Chris Endersby moves everyone around and they are really great. So, you know, please do come along to that one. And then on Monday, we've got our dinner in Maidstone at the Arida Hotel. So we have got two new patrons of Synergy and they're launching in 2026. So the Arida Hotel is one of our patrons. And then Tom Revley of IT Manager Services is our second patron. And we're offering patrons lots of different things. So they can basically talk at our summits. They can choose to host a single event every month. That would be included in being a patron. They get a go on every email footer going out from our company. So the exposure they get is huge. And they also get an advert on the radio show, which Tom has, you know, gone for again this year. So it's great value to be a Synergy patron. So, and Sandra, you've actually sponsored a couple of the events, haven't you?
Yes, I did actually, and it's quite a positive sort of opportunity, and it's great because you can kind of, you know, showcase your business, and more than that, it's a good way to educate business owners out there of what's coming and what they should expect, and really how to kind of find their way around that. So in terms of sponsorship, I think it's a fantastic way to promote your brand and your message.
Mm. And I mean, it was great because you were helping them with all the current HR stuff, weren't you, when you did your presentation?
I like the way you say current, because it's just at the moment things are changing so quickly and every month, and which is why I think it's best we don't delve too much into the new employment rights bill that's going through the government, and parts of it will be coming into effect in April 2026. I think my message to, you know, businesses is going to remain quite the same regardless of what happens in the bill, is just ensure that you have at least some robust paperwork in place because really you're entering into a contract. It's a contract between you and your employees, and that is best in writing. You know, it as much as, yes, you can have a verbal contract, but there are all sorts of issues that arise when there are disagreements. And ultimately, when you sit down to either address that disagreement, either through a grievance or through a settlement agreement, one looks for a contract. And when it's not there, then the ball is in the employer's court, in effect, to say, right, how am I going to make this problem go away, and what am I willing to shell out to make that problem go away? Which frankly, employers do not have to find themselves in that position if only they had a contract in the first place. Things would be a lot easier. I'm not saying that you will not be faced with a situation of, you know, either a grievance or a settlement agreement negotiation. You will still you might still be faced with that, but the process becomes a lot less stressful and a little more seamless when you have that contract that defines where and how the relationship began between you and your employee.
Don't you think that's the same though? I mean, you know, I'm finding that with my business, I need a paper trail for everything. Yeah, I mean, organising these dinner dances, I mean, I've done an email this morning, you know, you need to do an email with a running order. You've got to make sure you copy everyone into that. You know, I've had to list all of the prizes. And if I've been really busy and someone said, I'll give you this prize and I'm out somewhere else, I'm going back and I'm thinking, I cannot remember what that is. I need to start using my phone notes more, really. So when someone sends me something, I make a note and then I've got it there on my phone, because I, you know, at the moment, with so much going on, I feel like I've got stuff coming in. I feel like one of those cyber things on the Daleks, on Doctor Who, where he's got all those streams coming in from everywhere. So, yeah, that's what I'm feeling like at the moment. Anyway, let's move on to Rachel.
Can I just come back to you on the contract?
Sure.
I think it is very important to have a contract. But also I think it's very important for the individual who is preparing the contract to read through it in detail, not just glance at it, but being very specific. I've been caught out a few times in terms of somebody coming to me after 2 years employment and giving me 1 week's notice. Mm-hmm. And it actually does say that in the contract.
Absolutely.
And many years ago, it was set up by Peninsula, who are supposed to be good companies for producing contracts.
Please do, Rachel.
However, I mean, for somebody after 2 years to give you 1 week's notice, a very senior position, so we had to go back and physically go in and change the contracts. So that's a very good point you've made, but I still think people need to look at it in detail.
I think the difference is it's a bit like they say, it's horses for courses. So it's a service that you're willing to pay for. With, you know, you can either have a service that just pulls contracts off the racks and hands it out to business owners and says, there you go. Or HR consultants, there are many HR consultants in West Kent, including us, who will sit with a client, understand your business, understand your pain points, what is your risk appetite, and then draft a contract accordingly. And I have never agreed a contract with a client in the first version. It's usually the third or the fourth version is that gets finalized. And that's because we expect clients to go through. In fact, we just mark certain areas which we want them to read and come back to us on.
So you're talking about generic documents rather than specific?
No, our documents are bespoke.
Yeah, bespoke.
Our contracts are bespoke to every operation, and not just your operation, it's even down to your risk management. And to some extent, it'll also talk about your expectations, your expectations, and what sort of culture you really want to, you know, incorporate within your operations. That's what comes out in the contract. Mm. And this is why a contract, I always make, you know, draw this analogy. A contract is very much like a will. You know, you can either have a will that you just, you know, you just sort of download from the internet, or you have a bespoke will that's going to hold you in good stead much later.
Brilliant. Okay, thank you so much. So, Rachel from Constant Recruitment.
Hi, Linda.
Handy you being here when Peter's looking for somebody.
You're like the fairy godmother.
So, some of the points, you know, we want to go through. Obviously, there was some, you sent me an email saying that discuss maybe some of the wider discussion, but let's go through some things that you do first. So, mainly you focus on IT talent, the IT talent that's in Kent. And you help people in Kent and the South East find those types of people.
Yeah, that's right. So I've been doing IT recruitment for 20 years now, and 10 years previously to that, I was in IT. So if you want to get the best out of me, you're looking to hire permanent member of staff in Kent. Do I go outside of Kent? Yes, I do, because I get asked to by clients or recommendations, and that's always fun. Do I recruit non-IT roles in Kent? Yeah, I do. I go out on a limb for certain companies or certain people that I like for some reason. but as I say, my real knowledge and my real strong network is in the IT in Kent.
Mm. So you've also put here what SMEs often get wrong in the hiring process. So what is it that you find that businesses do get wrong in the hiring process?
I think the trouble with SMEs, maybe they haven't had a lot of experience of recruiting staff. Maybe this is a new thing. They're my favourite types of companies that are smaller, they're growing, and it can be quite scary. That's before we get to the HR part. I think that there's a temptation to treat it like an admin process instead of looking for that skill that can really transform your business when it's crucial, when you're growing, when you probably actually needed somebody a little while ago. So that's what I think they get wrong. And I think also SMEs feel that perhaps they can't afford a professional recruiter. So they think, let's put an advert out on one of the sites that I dislike, like Indeed, and see what comes to them. The issue there is that you're getting the top 20% of people who are very actively looking, and the staff that you probably want that are going to make the real difference to your business are probably passive. They're probably actually quite happy in their jobs at the moment, and they need searching out, convincing. They need to understand your business, your culture, your aspirations, and hopefully that fits. And that's before we get to the skill set.
And the other thing, I mean, I was trained on how to interview, and I actually taught my daughter how to interview, because I think the interview process is so important because you can find out so much. But it's changed so much from when I did it. Like, you can't ask someone's age, can you? There's lots of things you can't ask on an application form now that do actually, you know, impact. I mean, you know, I remember actually saying, and you're both going to kill me for this, but I remember saying, we don't want to employ someone of an age where they could fall pregnant, because then we're going to lose them for 9 months. And that would be like,
Linda,
there's absolutely no way you can do that, is there?
No.
I know. That was a long, long time ago, and you used to get away with it then.
Can I just add there? I don't think that's a long, long time ago, because we still, there are a minority of business owners, even to this day, who will say, I do not want to hire somebody who has little kids.
Do they?
Or this person is fantastic in the way, you know, in what they can do, I think, for the business, but I'm not going to hire her because she's got little kids, or her kids are going to be starting school very soon, and I know they're going to be falling sick very often, and I can't have that. And I will always go back to this example that possibly I also mentioned during one of the events I was sponsoring, where it was fantastic to see the, you know, how we turned that around for this business, because they, the, one particular client was faced with a situation like that where they didn't want to hire this individual, and but this individual was the only person who was actually filling that skills gap that this business had, and we ensured that we put the right kind of, and this was even pre-COVID, so we put some flexible working arrangements in place, but and this individual had twins, you know, who were going to school, who were going to start school very soon. But eventually it was a success story, because this business owner went from not wanting to hire her at all and, you know, taking her on board, and for her, she ended up continuing to work there for the next 5 years, and she's now holding the position of a manager in that business.
Wow.
So that, you know, shows sometimes when, you know, just to add to what Rachel was saying, I think business owners sometimes go into recruitment with a bit like horse with blinkers. You know, they have a very set view on whom they want to hire and how that ideal candidate must look like. Mm. When actually, if you, I understand the Equality Act, you know, yes, has made it impossible, and rightly so, to ask certain questions. But if business owners went in with a far more open mind to hire the right candidate for the role, they would be amazed as to what sort of diversity, what diversity can do for their business and for their operations.
And often you find that someone in that situation is more committed.
Yeah, I think things have changed, especially in the tech industry. So if we go back over 20 years ago when my children were young, it seemed to be more so that the woman would take on the responsibility of the childcare, maybe 98% of the childcare, and would be trying to fit that around her job. But I've noticed with candidates now who are maybe in their 30s and they've got small children, that there does seem to be a shift. I'm not saying it's equal. I really don't think it's equal still. I think women carry more of that load. But the chaps are getting a lot more involved. And when I'm speaking to candidates, they are saying to me, I need some flexibility. And I say, what's that? And they say, well, I need to pick my child up from school on a Tuesday and a Thursday. But I'll be super flexible around that because my wife works as well. I mean, most of us need two incomes now because of the cost of living. Mm. And it does seem to be slightly more shared. So maybe there's not quite so much against the women with the scare, the fear that they're going to have to look after the children. And it's going to, well, they've still got to give birth, haven't they? But, you know, you know, there is that there. So I think that's become less. But you just don't know. You might employ Nigel. Nigel doesn't look like he's going to get pregnant, but Nigel gets hit by a bus tomorrow. But, you know, you can't make too many assumptions about candidates, which is why, and there's lots of interviewing methods. And if you go to my website, I've written lots of blogs about how to do this and interview, how to do that, or if you're the client, how to interview, how to get the best out people. But I'm a real big believer in people first recruitment. And what I mean by that is to really to get to know the person before you then dive into the technical skills. Now, obviously in IT, there's certain technical skills we can't live without, but is to really understand that candidate in front of you and what their drivers are.
Mm-hmm.
As part of this and trying to make the recruitment process better and make the hire rate better, with all of my candidates, I torture them with a thing called a, called a Hinterview, which is a video interview that I do with them. So we have a chat, and then afterwards I will say to them, like, we're going to have a 5-minute video interview, and I'm going to send that to the client. And what that does is that they can see your communication skills. They can pick up on, I don't know, the nonverbal thing. It humanizes you, especially now with AI. We need to see the true person, not just this vanilla cutout. But on that, I very basically base it around, tell me about what you've been doing. So we talk about their experience. Then tell me about what's going to make you happy. What things are going to make you happy in the job?
Good question. That's a good question.
Yeah. And I said, well, whatever that is, there's no wrong answer. I want to know generally what your drivers are. You know, in IT, a lot of the time, that would be learning progression in terms of that. It might be, I'm trying to keep all the balls in the air. I want a life-work balance. And then finally, we talk about the fit for the role and the company.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep it to 5 minutes so it can be done. And then the client then brings them to interview and delves down deeper obviously in the traditional sense that you do. But I think that's so important.
Mm, definitely. And interview skills is something that you can certainly help with the interviewing, isn't it? Because a lot of company, I mean, you know, so many of us, when we start a business and then we find that we're maybe not as good at bookkeeping as we thought we might be, or we're not as good at something else, you know, obviously there's lots of people who struggle with HR. And what I found with Synergy is I'm pulling in the skills of the people that members, you know, to help me, particularly with lots of things to do with marketing and CRMs and stuff like that at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's worth bringing in a professional. I mean, I bring in an accountant, I bring in an HR person, yeah. I bring marketing people to help me because, yeah, maybe I could do it. But that's not what I'm really good at. So let me focus on the bit that I'm really good at and bring in a professional to focus on the other areas. That's what we should all be doing. None of us are Superman or Superwoman, are we?
Although we try to be. Yeah. Definitely. So what's some quick practical changes that small businesses can make sort of straight away?
What, to attracting the right staff?
Yes, yeah.
Well, funnily enough, I think flexible working, as I said, if I put out an advert and it's remote or work from home, that will really entice a lot of people. And they've got different reasons for wanting to do that. Sometimes it's actually disability. So I've got a candidate on my books at the moment. He needs to work remotely from home. So you can get more staff in that way. I think that when you're actually starting to hire, though, that you really need to think about everything. You need to think about what do you want. What problem do you have that this role is going to solve for you? Is what you think the answer, is that really the answer? Or is it worth a discussion around that? It might be a slightly different role. I had it with a client last year. What they thought they needed wasn't at all what they needed. What they actually needed was a data analyst. And they'd been through a six-month recruitment process with another agency, hadn't got anywhere. These are not the right type of people. And I really drilled down on it because they were looking for completely the wrong type of person. I've had other clients where we've spoken about marketing roles, for example, and they said, look, we're not quite big enough, but we want our own person. I said, well, why don't we look at part-time? Would that work for you? And actually I've filled these roles with somebody who wanted to work 20 hours a week because actually they had children and they didn't want to work 40 hours a week. And that company's ended up with somebody much better than perhaps they deserved. I myself, when I've recruited people, who are doing business development for me, and it's fitted around other things in their life. So it might be children, or at the moment I've got the lovely Alex who works for me and does amazingly, but he's been completing his law degree at the same time. So he's obviously needs to be at uni. He's been doing lots of work experience, and then he's been working for me as well. And you really do get the best out of people. They're coming in fresh. They want to succeed. And that flexibility that you can show them can really help you as much as it can help them. Mm. With the adverts, I think that you really need to look at the advert that you're putting out there. Not that I believe that you're going to get your ideal candidate from the advert, but it's still worth trying because you never know. But a lot of the time it reads like a wants list or recipe. That you're not really getting any feeling out of that. You know, try and talk to the candidate. If you're looking for this, then this could be the role for you. Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? And then really explain the role, what's in it for them, what's in it for you, what you're expecting. But give it a bit of life and passion. And also, the other thing I think, if you are looking to hire, people want to know what it's like to work for you. So one of my clients has got an amazing About Us page, and they said to me one day, oh, you keep talking about employer branding. What do you mean? I said, well, you know, you could even put up videos that people currently work there. This is what we do. This is what the culture's like. And they went away and did it. They've got the most amazing page ever. And of course, when I'm speaking to candidates, I said, look, have a look at this. It's not fake. It's real. I place the people. I know what they look like. And they get that sense of fun and what it's like to really work at the company. So, yeah, you need to think of it from the other way around as well.
What about CVs? Because I've noticed that, you know, people now, people that I know that are applying for work are tailoring their CVs to certain roles. So, but if you maybe haven't got the know-how or know that you should do that and you just got one CV and just send it out to for 10 jobs, what should the employers be looking for on a CV that, you know, that might help them to find the right candidate?
Oh, the employers. Well, I suppose it needs to make sense, doesn't it? What is the experience that they've done? Does this role make sense for them to move into? Are they going to bring that through? I think employees can help that. I could probably pick apart every CV that you could put in front of me to some extent. But my main bugbear is the profile. So I really like a profile, but I want the profile to say what this person is and what they want to do. So I can read that very quickly. Recruiters read a lot of CVs, and there was an article that said that a recruiter spends 6 seconds reading a CV. I thought, that's not true.
No.
Well, it is.
Oh, is it?
Oh, I do. Because then I had a look and I thought, yeah, I spend about 6 seconds deciding how closely I'm going to read that CV. So you need to grab that attention quickly. We need to know, well, possibly.
What would grab your attention quickly?
My eye flicks down and I'm looking, obviously, at the name, because although that's irrelevant to some extent, then you're flicking at where do they live? Do they actually live near where this company is? I don't want a relocator, it's a perm role. Then I'm looking down at the profile and I'm reading the first few words and I think, is this type of person that I'm actually looking for? And then I suppose I flick down and I start looking at skills because I'm a tech recruiter, and then my eye goes down to the last role and I'm starting to read that. So very quickly you're flicking down and you're thinking, oh yes, this looks like they've got the goodies that I'm looking for. Then you go back and you read it very properly, obviously, in more than 6 seconds. Mm. But it's whether you're going to dedicate that time. And I think the problem at the moment, and in part I think is due to AI at the moment, I think a lot of applications. So I had a client the other day and he put an advert out. He had 800 applications in 2 days. Now, can you imagine the admin load that has suddenly caused you to even shortlist, see if there's anybody worth speaking to? And I thought that was quite shocking. You know, I was speaking to another client and I was telling him the story because I thought it was so shocking. He said, oh, I can beat that. I said, you can't. He said, yeah. He said, I put an advert out for a C-sharp developer, 2,000 CVs.
Oh.
And, you know, and that is a load that you can't see the wood for the trees. Going back to my original thing that I'm saying, you probably not getting the person from the advert anyway. You suddenly read, scanned, gone through 2,000 CVs and the person's not even in there. It's just enough to really get you down.
Go on, Sandra.
Do you find that something like that tends to happen because there isn't enough detail within the JD, within the job description and the advert? Because sometimes I find when a job description is very fluidly worded, there isn't enough specific requirements about, you know, the person or the job that's outlined there. It just kind of leaves it open to more applications. Whereas when you drill it down to proper detail, it narrows it down.
Can I just ask, there's another question really, which is a good point you made.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people want to change jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Although you put in a specific work role, people want to come. I even get adverts from or CVs coming in from carers who physically would like to change roles, even though they may not be qualified or have that experience. But why would they want to change roles? You know, like carers or people working in Tesco's. Do you not find that?
Oh, yeah. We get a lot of that as well. But no, I don't think it's the content of the advert. I think it's a case that they've just become maybe desperate and done the scattergun approach, and it's almost too easy to apply. Click and apply. Mm. I mean, you know, yes. If I get my CV out to 2,000 people, maybe I stand more chance.
Too easy to apply, yes.
Yeah, it's quite frustrating if you have crafted a really good, strong advert. Then you think, have you not even read this? No, I don't think they are reading it. I think they're just reading maybe the salary, maybe the job title, and then clicking and applying through that.
Wow, that's scary, isn't it? Because, I mean, I know when I've read through CVs, and I say I've had 20 or 30 CVs when we were applying for people to assist in the social media business, and that was, you know, it was difficult reading through, going through everything and trying to determine who is going to be best fit for the business. I mean, Elle was very good. She used to, you know, whittle it down sort of thing, just from what she knew, from what they were putting as their experience on there. But there's so many things that you need for the job role that we were advertising. It's not just being good at social media, if you know what I mean. I mean, your spelling's got to be great, and, you know, there's lots of things, isn't there, you've got to consider. So
I think the other side to that, that if I'm a really good quality candidate and I'm looking for the right next move, I don't want to be a bum on the seat, I don't want an interim role, I want to join a really good company. If that advert hasn't given me enough detail and enough information, I'm not going to apply for that job. Or you see some adverts and you think they look a bit dodgy, they look a bit scammy. You're not going to apply for that. If you put an advert out and you don't put the salary on, and I know that some companies are thinking, oh, no, we want to keep it quiet, almost don't bother putting it out.
It's because, not best practice, no.
Yeah, you will get 20% of the applications Absolutely. That you would do otherwise. And people are questioning why are they not putting the salary. And it doesn't start off on a good footing. Put a salary range, depending on experience. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've only got a little bit, we're happy to train, but it might be at this end. But if you've got absolutely everything, maybe we'll look at this end. At least we know where we are. The candidates know where they are. The employer knows where they are.
Have you got a blog on how to write an advert?
I think I probably have, Linda. If anybody wants it, I will share it. Or maybe I should do a post or something and refresh.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's those sorts of things that I think businesses are always looking for, aren't they? Just put it in from a different perspective. And
but we've got to go back to my point. You're not going to get your quality staff from an advert. Mm-hmm. And I spend a fortune on advertising. You would cry and weep. But when I look at the people that I placed, often, say I've had a candidate apply for role A, I've got speaking to them and realise that actually I've got a better idea and this is role C and it fits them much better and they haven't applied for that role. So if you actually looked at my stats of how many candidates I've placed that have applied for that exact role for that job, it's very few.
Mm-hmm.
Because there'd be other reasons, there'd be other motivators, or maybe they just haven't seen the other advert, or I don't know. It's too much to chance. You need to be sure on who you want and then be able to find them.
Wow. Okay. Thank you so much, Rachel. So tell me what it is that you would like and what would help your business today.
I like SME businesses. I like businesses that employ under 50 people, ideally in the southeast. I absolutely adore the managed service providers. I can add a lot of value to them. But equally, you may be a software house, you may be looking for developers, dare I say, it might be looking for salespeople, because that's not quite my favourite. But companies in the southeast, less than 50 staff, looking to add some value hires, I would love to speak to you. Obviously, as well, I do also love candidates. So,
yeah, we need some of them.
If you're a tech candidate in the southeast looking for a perm job, because I do not deal with any contracts at all, then please get in touch with me. Let me see if I can help you.
Okay, fantastic. And how would people get hold of you?
Oh, yeah. So you can go to our website, which I wish I made that shorter, actually, but it's constantrecruitment.co.uk. You can email me, rachel@constantrecruitment.co.uk. We're on LinkedIn, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on TikTok, we're everywhere.
You're on Synergy.
Yeah, we're on Synergy.
That's brilliant. Well, look, we're going to go for a break now. And when I was chatting earlier to Sandra, she said that one of the best songs for her clients is I'm Still Standing. Why was that?
Well, it's just the relief you hear in their voice and you see on your faces when a problem is resolved and they say, never again am I landing in that pickle. So, and I think you live and learn, you know, and that's what it is, you know, to run a business.
Mm.
So that song always resonates with me when I see that moment for my clients.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for choosing the song. So we're going to play a few adverts and then what we'll be doing is going to the song and then we'll be back afterwards and the show doesn't finish until 1. So stay tuned and we'll speak to you again in a mo.
Linda Cloak on the Business Networking Show.
Tired of IT headaches? Slow computers? Security worries? Lost files? Sound familiar? We've got your back. As Kent's leading IT support partner, we keep your business running smoothly
securely and stress-free. Call 0179-534-2362 now and get your IT sorted.
Just like ice, and there's a cold and lonely light that shines from you. You wind up like the wreck you hide behind that mask you use. And did you think this fool could never win? Well, look at me, I'm coming back again. I got a taste of love in a simple way. And if you need to know while I'm still standing, you just fade away. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor. Feeling like a little kid. I'm still standing after all this time. Picking up the pieces of my life without you on my mind. I'm still standing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm still standing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Once I never could hope to win, you're stopping down the road and leaving me again. You made were meant to cut me down. And if my love was just a circus, you'd be a clown by now. And no, I'm still hanging better than I ever did. Looking like a true survivor.
Working that feels like hard work? It shouldn't be a chore. It should be a chance to grow. Join the Synergy business community and connect with like-minded professionals right in your area. We provide the opportunities to boost your brand's visibility and growth without the stress. Stop wishing for better contacts. Start building them. Visit synergynetworkingevents.co.uk today. Or call us at 077-699-43756.
Do you need a reliable property management service or lettings agent? PJJS is a well-established property management and residential lettings company in Maidstone, Kent, which deliver an effective and efficient quality service. Call us now on +44 78 55 746 966.
Well, we had to cut that song a bit short because it sounded like Elton John was, I don't know, gargling water while he was singing. It all went a bit weird, didn't it? So I just want to run through a couple of our events first. So we've had some really great news. We've been asked by Metro Bank to run their events in Ashford and Canterbury. So we're actually launching with Metro Bank on the 20th of January, and that's going to be in their Ashford branch. It's going to be a free networking event. So they'll be supplying pastries and fruit along with apple juice, orange juice and tea and coffee, which is going to be amazing. And they're basically, what we're going to do is we're going to do open networking first. Then there'll be a few people doing talks, which will be great. One of those is going to be Chris Henry. So Chris Henry did a photo shoot for me and Chris and Laura yesterday. It was basically headshots. So if you haven't got a proper headshot for your LinkedIn, then please do contact Chris Henry and he'll be able to help. Peter's got a cold.
Sorry about that.
That's right. And also just want to run through some of our January events. So we've got the Whitstable Walk, which is becoming more and more popular on the 6th of January. And Bethany meets everyone at 10 a.m. to go on that walk. Then we are at Medway Avenue Tennis in the evening of the 6th of January. So that's Tuesday, the 6th of January, first day back for most people. And then we're in Sidcup at the Star, With lovely Pete Marshall. We're there on the 7th of January, and that's at 6:30 in the evening. And then we're at Kings Hill on the 8th of January for our first Kings Hill Corporate Club, which will be 10:30 in the morning. So lots going on. We're also going to be training Bethany because she's taken the first franchise. So it's going to be fun times next year. And then we've got Hazel Hall is going to be taking on the TN West events in the TN West area. So very interesting. She's looking at launching events in Crowborough and areas just outside of Tunbridge Wells as well. So that's going to be really good. And I know that Bethany is looking at launching in Ramsgate. So that would be handy for the CT postcode people. So maybe I should ask to do one in Tunbridge because you're quite keen on that one, aren't you?
Definitely. I just think we need to have, there's definitely a lot of hunger for networking within Tunbridge.
Mm.
But somehow, most new networking groups tend to launch more in Tunbridge Wells at Seven Oaks. Having said that, the Seven Oaks Chamber of Commerce, since they have started, networking in events, holding networking events in Tunbridge every alternate month, it's always heaving with about 60 odd members in the room.
I actually miss going there.
There is very much an appetite for good networking groups within Tunbridge. Mm. So yes, please do launch more such events.
I know that there's lots going on in Tunbridge Wells, but when we had three members who were really pushing us to open Tunbridge Wells, and they were saying there's nothing going on. And then I think when we did last night, I think there was two other networking events going on last night. So there is actually quite a lot going on in Tunbridge Wells. But, you know, the venue we've got is fantastic. So and I think when you find a good venue that's supportive, that's really, really important. So we're looking for a venue in Canterbury at the moment because we would like to hold a summit there. So let's see if we can find somewhere. So Sandra is with the HR department, and we had quite a long chat before. So tell us about your background and how you, you know, became an HR professional.
So I started as an HR coordinator for a railway company in North London, and there was, you know, regular interface with the trade unions, the RMT trade unions. And that is where I started my career as an HR professional, very much, interacting and sort of with trade unions, dealing with employee relations on a day-to-day basis. And it was a fantastic way to launch my career because there is nothing you don't come across. And there is nothing that is easy when you're dealing with trade unions, you know. Mm. So I was kind of thrown into the deep end for the first 7 to 8 years of my career. But my goodness, did I learn the most during those 7 to 8 years. One thing led to another. And I worked across different sectors in London. The last firm I worked for, I actually, Rachel will find this quite interesting, but I quit a full-time permanent job after I became a mother. And I went on to working full-time, excuse me, but as a temp. Mm-hmm. It's only because I just wanted more variety in my job, and temping gave me that. And actually, temping also gave me the first flavor of what it was going to be like to be a consultant, and I absolutely enjoyed it.
Mm. I was going to ask that, going from big companies to suddenly working with lots of different smaller ones.
Yes. So, and temping really gave me that flavor for what it is like to work on various different projects. I was still very much involved with unions. Again, I think it's hard to escape that when you're working with some big names in London. Mm. So that was really interesting. But it was never as intense as the first, when you're working with a public-private partnership, for example, because public-private partnership, there is so much visibility in the public eye. You're dealing with councils. And when trade unions, you know, chuck a spanner in the works, it all becomes very, high-strung. So things were, that's how I eventually launched my business. But one of the biggest reasons I also launched my business, and this is going back exactly 8 years now, so this was December 2017, I had returned from my second stint of maternity leave, and I found that there was still very much that glass ceiling where, you know, businesses just did not want to entertain individuals or mums, new mums, in the workforce. And I thought, well, that's perfectly fine. I can, you know, I still have a lot to offer. And that's how this business was launched, an HR department as a franchise. We are a franchise, been going for about 24 years now as a franchise. But my business, I bought the territories in West Kent 8 years ago, and there has been no looking back since then.
Can I ask you what made you go for a franchise rather than setting up on your own? Because obviously we're doing franchises, and
yeah.
I mean, we have got, you know, a very unique formula to in the networking world. So if someone said to me, why would someone use you rather than set up on the own? I've got a good reason to give that. Is that, what good reason did you have to go for a franchise rather than set up on your own?
I think there were a couple of big reasons for me that jumped out. One, the branding was established. It was laid out for me, and I did not have to worry about setting up, you know, organizing a website, designing my brand. The second thing was the network of HR professionals. I mean, we are 64 HR professionals across the country, including my office in West Kent. And we all come with such varied backgrounds, varied work experience, that when there is, you know, for a client, I think that's fantastic, because you've not just got my acumen there supporting your business. If I need to find additional answers for you, I can go to the network and get those answers for you. So it's and what also really the third main thing about HR department franchise was, we work with small business owners only. Now, small business owners, again, given my background of working in London for big corporates, I mean, we would sign settlement agreements once every month almost, you know, just chuck money at a problem and make it go away. Small business owners do not have that sort of muscle, you know, in their cash flows. So the one of the biggest things that really drew me to HR department was the fact that they, not only do they have a legal arm that will jump in for a client when there's a claim on the table, but there is also protection through tribal indemnity insurance with no small print. I mean, and I can say that very openly. Our conditions are just bare minimum. Just take our advice, you know, consult with us on an issue and just let us know on day one when an issue crops up. And our insurers will definitely pick up that claim for you. And for business owners, your majority of the claims that have been settled on behalf of my clients start at about 12, 13 grand moving upwards. That sort of money never leaves their kitty. It goes from the insurers. And that's a huge
benefit
and gives them the peace of mind to run their business. Because when they're faced with claims, we also see the other side, where business owners will come to us with no paperwork and they've been hit with a claim, and we try and settle that for them, which we do. But the stress they go through is on a different level.
I can imagine that.
So for me, HR department was a no-brainer because of these reasons, these three main reasons. And I just felt like I could, you know, as long as I knew what I was doing and, you know, I was doing a good job for my clients, they, you know, that protection was going to take them further.
And do you find that many of the other HR sections come to you because of your experience with unions? Because I can't imagine there's that many HR people that've got that experience.
When you're working with SMEs, and this is what I have found in the last 8 years, there are very few SMEs that actually recognize a trade union. There are very few staff who are part of a trade union. Having said that, you're still dealing with employee relations. I don't think clients come to me more than they go to any other HR consultant just because of trade union experience. I think ultimately it's clients come to HR department because they, you know, one is through word of mouth referrals. Two, with HR department, there is, you know, it's almost like a one-stop shop of what you need to manage your staff all under one provider. So we provide everything from, you know, contracts and handbooks and that framework for employers to efficiently launch a team going into, you know, anything to do with consultations. So disciplinary grievances, performance management modules, running an employee satisfaction survey, redundancy consultations, restructures. So we deal with absolutely all of that. And then we also have a benefits provider who will provide a suite of benefits. And when I say suite, it doesn't have to be sound so posh, but the point is, you know, we come across a number of, again, cases where employers will ring me and say, Sandhya, this person has gone off with a mental health issue with no indication of when they're going to come back to work. And I'm really worried what's going to happen. And one of the things we always say in those situations is, or even if, say, somebody suffered with, you know, from suffering from a bereavement in the family, somebody's relative is suffering from cancer, life happens, right? We even have many cases of, quite a few cases, especially since COVID, where individuals will disclose issues around domestic abuse in their lives. And we find that besides every other element, you know, offering an employee assistance program is very beneficial. So if for me, it's just a quick call to our benefits partner to say, please, can you help this client to just get that employee assistance program started? And within the next 24 hours, this employee can actually be on the phone to a counselor and have a few sessions of therapy, which the reason that is useful is because where you have an employee who's just switched off from the world and doesn't want to hear anything or do anything, we offer that support. Where if they see that their employer is willing to offer that support, then the onus is on the employee to take that support and take control of mental health problems that they are faced with. And that places the employer in a better position to then initiate those conversations around, right, how are you feeling? When are you good to return to work? Can we refer you to occupational health? It opens the door for those conversations because you've given the employee the support they need at a time when they need it.
And do you find that, or have you found that mental health is more of an issue now than it was when you first launched your business 8 years ago?
I think there's more awareness. I think mental health was always an issue, but there is more awareness. People are talking about it more openly. And I think we've moved on from just referring to something as mental health. I very much, you know, see now that people are very open and employers are very open to, and employees are very open to talking about neurodivergence in the workplace, domestic abuse, bereavement, divorce, you know, you name it. So people aren't just saying mental health. People are willing to name the root cause of mental health problems. And that is actually shining a light on day-to-day issues that we all are faced with. There is lesser of a, you know, a sense of shame or taboo around these things, which I think is really important as well. For, and that doesn't mean to say employers have to take on the worries of the world. You must still have boundaries and a framework as to how and what you expect within the workplace. And that's where we come in to help employers. Because I always say, I think 99% of employers out there are very kind, very generous. But when you go the other end to be kind and generous, you kind of create a rod for your backs. And that's where you really need to have a good framework that strikes the balance between you doing the right thing by your staff, but also laying out your expectations unambiguously.
And do you find that many, I mean, I can imagine, you know, I've set up loads of businesses and it's never been something I've thought about. Is it something businesses are thinking more about now in regards to HR?
You mean, sorry,
I mean, you know, so mental? I'm going back years, for example, when I was with my husband, we had a fencing company and we also manufactured concrete fence posts. So we had like a guy driving around on a forklift. We had men tipping out, you know, concrete posts. They're working with hazardous, you know, stuff. You know, the men that were out even doing the fencing, you know, they're digging holes. There's dumpers driving past, all this stuff going on. And we never had a HR person.
That would be more health and safety.
Right. Okay.
And yes, HR department also has a sister concern, which deals with health and safety. I'm not licensed to advise about health and safety. But yes, I think, again, there's this whole, there is a requirement that when you employ more than five staff, there are certain specific things that should be in place in relation to health and safety.
I mean, I'm going back 30 years, 35 years.
Yeah, but I think when it comes to employee assistance programs, there has been very good uptake from staff on that just because NHS waiting times are too long. It's not easy to get, signed up for therapy through the NHS. And if this is available to you, even if it's only six sessions in a year, and then you want to top up with anything else, that's down to the employee. But what it really does is just puts the onus on the employee to take control of issues and work with the employer to then keep, you know, to sort of come back to work.
Do you do for an employer, say he wanted to do, I'm trying to think of the word, like a satisfaction survey of his staff?
Employee satisfaction survey, yes. Yes, so we run that.
Right, so you would run that for them and then you get the feedback from the staff When you do that, do you find some employers are quite shocked with the feedback they get?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think, but, you know, I'd rather employers are shocked by an employee, by what comes out in a survey, than when they receive a grievance. And we find that when there's a grievance on the table, they're actually, it's a bit late in the day to be talking about those issues. Having said that, there are always lessons to be learned from every grievance. But secondly, when you kind of go through a grievance, you know, line by line and start addressing it, we find that there have been a number of lost, missed opportunities along the way. And yes, that's where things like a survey will come into, you know, will be quite handy.
Mm. How often should someone run something like that?
A year, once a year,
okay.
Ideally. Because things happen, change happen, especially, I think, if you're going through. So this is another thing. When you initiate any sort of change within the business, give it about 18 to 24 months for that change to bed in. People don't like change. Staff don't like change. Even when you bring an HR consultant in, and if say you're a business who has just done things, you know, as a sole business owner, or your family member has taken care of HR admin, mm-hmm. and suddenly you bring an HR consultant in, staff don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
It gets their back up. They're worried. So give 18 to 24 months for that change to bed in. I always go and don't just meet, you know, my clients. I meet their staff, because over time I try and build that relationship with staff members. And I just think business owner, and there are various different ways in which you can manage that change. Running a staff survey is one such thing to do. But even through so many other ways, you know, performance management, how do you communicate?
Performance management, that's what I was actually thinking.
How do you communicate? You know, are you picking up some early niggles when you're sitting down for that discussion with your staff? And if you haven't, that's another missed opportunity, because eventually all that's going to bubble and show up as a grievance.
How would you deal with a company like Peter's where all of his staff are remote? Because, you know, if you go into an office, it's much easier to meet the staff. But obviously, with how many staff have you got, Peter?
Seven.
So you've got seven staff all working remotely. That'd be very difficult for you to be able to meet the staff.
Yeah, sure enough. And when I say meet the staff, it doesn't have to be, yes, it's usually face to face. So say, you know, you have clients whose staff work flexibly, but when they come into the office, that would be the day I'd go and meet them initially. But thereafter, you keep in touch with staff. You know, you take, you know, some of my clients have weekly team meetings. It's on Teams or Zoom. It's an online meeting.
Mm.
At least once a month, I'm there in those team meetings. So staff can see me. Mm. There is a face behind that name. Mm. There is a voice behind that name. They can raise things, you know, either at that meeting or thereafter, they can call me. So it's about that relationship isn't going to be, you don't have to be there face to face to build that relationship. This is what I'm trying to get at. There are many different opportunities you can tap into to build that relationship. And the same holds good for employers, you know, with their staff. So it doesn't matter whether you're working remotely or you're all in one office. Make the time and the space, you know, to kind of come together and get to know each other.
Mm. Do you find, Rachel, that if you're working for a company doing recruitment, do you find that some are recruiting? And that could be something that an HR person could, you know, could have some impact on, you know, a positive impact, I mean. Because if they're having a big turnover of staff, then potentially for someone like Sandra to just come in and do a survey thingy, then...
Yeah, I mean, it's funny as a recruiter, isn't it? Because obviously we're getting paid to fill roles. So if you thought you had a client that was going to have lots and lots of vacancies in the next year, maybe that seems appealing. However, I must say that if it was a client who did seem to have a staff retention problem, that would scare me off as a recruiter, and I wouldn't really want to recruit for them. So I've got a really good reputation with placing people into roles and they stay over a year. In fact, my good hire rate is 96%. That means they've stayed over a year. So do I want to risk my reputation putting a candidate into a company that clearly has a problem? Not really.
I see.
Because
okay.
they're going to hold that against me forever, aren't they? And they're going to tell everybody and it's going to be awful. okay. So as a recruiter, if it's one of my long-term clients, so they may have been with me 20 years, I can tell them stories about people I placed in and how well they've done and so on and so forth. And that's great. But I never really know because I've never worked in the company. So I never really, truly know. I'm passing on the information that I've gleaned from people and from what the company themselves have told me. In fact, I have also written a blog about staff retention, which I can share, because it is really, really important. You're not going to encourage, if you're a great candidate and you went along for an interview with a company and they're clearly losing staff left, right and centre, you're not going to want to take that gamble of working for them.
No.
So I think that HR is really, really important, really valuable to bring in to iron out problems. Sometimes that problem is one person, but they're having quite a poisonous effect on the business. And I think HR needs to get in there and really get to know the members of staff to unearth that problem and hopefully sort that out. And HR also, if you're going to retain your staff, and this sounds bonkers almost, but I think the onboarding process is really, really important. So I think those first couple of weeks in new role are key. If you don't get the onboarding process right, you're setting yourself up for failure. So that's another point where I think it would help to bring an HR person to help with that onboarding process.
Sandra?
I think Rachel's touched upon a couple of really important points. It's very true that where you have a very high turnover of staff, most often we see that that's down to a core problem within that team. It's either down to one individual or a team of senior members who've kind of, they hold the clout, you know, within the business. They usually will be in very important positions such as payroll or finance, and nobody wants to rock the boat. As far as they're concerned, they've held that role for about 15, 20 odd years.
Mm.
And there's a certain way of working. And even the business owner doesn't want to challenge them. And this is my next point. When it comes to running a business as a good employer, I think if it is difficult sometimes to have those difficult conversations, and if employers are struggling to have those difficult conversations with key members of staff, seek help. Seek professional advice, because we have difficult, as HR consultants, I have difficult, you know, conversations either with a staff member or a manager on a regular basis. We can help you there, but there is no need to live with that problem, not knowing where to start. And in the process, you're losing staff left, right and center when you're having, when you've spent a lot on recruitment, training, onboarding, all of that.
It's funny, actually, because one of my very good friends, her daughter got a job in a very high profile football club, and very well trained in payroll, knew all the up to date systems and everything, went in and wanted to introduce this up to date system. And the payroll person that had been there for the last 15 years was not interested in coming away to the new system, would not do the changes. So therefore, because she was using such an antiquated system, that everything was taking so much longer, and the person that got the job was so frustrated that in the end she handed in a notice, and they were trying to get her to stay, and she's like, no, you know, I'm not going to stay somewhere where you're using this antiquated system. And they've still got that person there now. So obviously whoever's in charge doesn't want to, she's been there 15 years. So they don't want to rock the boat.
I just want to give a little statistic here.
Oh, go on then.
So the REC has done a survey. If you Google it, you will
Who's
find
Who's the
it.
REC?
The Recruitment Federation.
Okay.
Anyway, they were looking at what the cost of a bad hire was. And they were saying, so it's somebody who leaves in less than a year. And they've got a formula on there, so you can work it out. But just as an example, on a £45,000 a year salary, what do you think that cost of that hire would be if they left in less than a year?
I've got no clue.
£140,000.
Wow.
And as a recruiter, I thought, no, surely not. They're only on £45,000 salary. However, they break it down into the minutiae, and it does actually make sense when you read it. So my point is, often I reel this out to say the importance of getting that hire right in the first place, because the costs associated just add up, and that could be training, it could be your time, it could be the cost of the hire.
But this person would have been the right person, Rachel. But unfortunately, they had someone in there that would not allow her to use the systems that she knew would save the company money.
So she could have been a good hire, end up being a bad hire, ends up costing the company. My point is, it's not just about the recruiter putting them in, you know, in honeymoon season at the beginning and getting the hire right. It is about that nurturing process. And that's why I think HR can be invaluable to bring in. Sometimes I liken it to a pot plant. You know, if you went to the garden centre and you bought a plant, took it home, 6 months later said it's dead, well, you haven't watered it and you haven't put it in sunlight. So you need to nurture that person as well. To bring out the best in them so they can do the best for you as a business.
I think it's a bit of both. I think you, if you're just going to try and nurture a new starter whilst not dealing with deep-rooted, well-bedded, long-standard, standing toxic issues, that no matter how well you nurture, this person will be leaving. And that's what we've seen happening in a number of clients or some clients. And that's when clients come to us and say, what is going on? Because nobody seems to want to continue working here. And we've got this long-standing problem, which has now come out. But we don't know where to start. We don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, as a company, you shouldn't have to feel that you have to hang on to this person who's causing you so much damage, causing you so much money. But I think it's because HR seems such a scary thing, that thinking, oh my goodness, with all the employment laws, you know, I'm a decent company, I'm trying to do the decent thing. And I just can't see the wood from the trees. I think the companies need to see that actually, if you have got that problem person there ruining your business, that HR can come. There is a way out of this nightmare for you. You just need the right support.
Yeah. To be fair, employers recognise that. Some employers recognise it. Some employers don't see it until it's too late, like we were saying earlier, when there's a grievance on the table. But when it's one thing for employers to recognise that, but it's something else for employers to say, I want to deal with it and I'm ready to deal with it. Because many times these individuals are holding positions that, as I said, are pretty crucial. They know clients, they know the clients of the business, they know the ins and outs of the business. Their contracts might have been drafted 15 odd years ago. So when you sit down to draft a settlement agreement, you know that it's going to cost you, which is fine. We can deal with that. But again, that's when, you know, the importance of having the right level of insurance, tribunal indemnity insurance, all that comes into play. So when clients don't, so one thing, as you can see, it's all very interconnected. And when clients start thinking about all these links, it is difficult for them to take that first step and say, yeah, I want to deal with this problem. And we are very cognizant of that. We understand that it's not easy. But equally, do what is necessary for your business to protect your business, because and that's another problem we are seeing more of. We see business owners who've been in business for 30 odd years, 20 odd years. They're getting hit with sexual harassment claims, grievances which are generated by ChatGPT, toxic work environments where there are cliques within the business that's impacting retention. These are some of the issues we're seeing a lot of. Even when you sit down to deal, you know, restructure or make a role redundant just because the business has evolved, we're seeing ChatGPT generated notes that are being dished out during consultations. So it's a very changing, the HR scene is quite different today than it was even 5 years ago. All I would say is just before thinking of, yes, you have to nurture, you have to, you know, educate and take care of your staff, but do the most you can and do the best you can to secure your business and protect your business.
What I'm going to ask now is, what do you think about the iTrust app? Because iTrust, we're using it, but I think when I've seen how helpful that is for employers,
I think it's brilliant.
It's absolutely amazing, isn't it? Because it allows employees, have you seen it? Have you spoken to Nick?
Brilliant.
You know, allows employees to give feedback to employers anonymously, which is really, really important. And just having that, I mean, the cost of it is minimal. For the power of it. I mean, for us, it's been amazing. And the reason it has is because it's great from a perspective. We end up with loads of fantastic testimonials, which is great. But as an employer, if you've got an unhappy employee, it's such an easy way for them to give feedback. And also, if they don't give feedback, as one example that I know Nick gave, so someone took a company to court. I think there's a young lady took a company to court for something she's saying they hadn't done. And because he had iTrust in place, they said, well, why didn't you use this tool that's here for all of you to use?
Yeah, and much better for it to go on iTrust and to go on Glassdoor. Because some people, I don't know why, they write silly comments. So one of my clients, being nice, he's went to the office, would buy donuts for the staff. It wasn't compulsory. You didn't have to eat them. He was just trying to be generous. And somebody went on to Glassdoor and wrote, only work here if you want to get fat. The MD wants to give you diabetes.
Oh, no.
So, of course, if you were reading through those reviews, you'd think, idiot, that's not proper review. But effectively, it's put its Glassdoor review down.
Oh, no. How awful. Yeah. Oh, God. So I want to go on to, obviously, we support charities by giving them free membership to our clubs. And, you know, for the Maidstone and the Whitstable ones, they're very fortunate because we are, you know, they're getting all the proceeds of the dinners that we're doing. But we are also going to We Are Beams charity dinner. And that's on tomorrow night, actually. And we went to the one last month. Amazing, supported by lots of businesses. But you support a charity as well, don't you? What's your charity?
So HR Department West Kent supports Rights of Women. Mm-hmm. They are a London-based charity and the only charity in the UK that provides free legal advice to women. It's something that I've noticed ever since I started my business. It's quite common for employers to ring me with issues around either performance, sickness, absence, and yes, that does happen. It's but in a few cases, when we have sat down to speak with the employee, again, this is where the benefit of getting to know an employee comes in, because when an employee discloses issues around domestic abuse, say, for example, and I'm not talking just about, you know, being battered, and it's so much more than that. You know, as we know now, there's mm-hmm. financial abuse, there's coercive control. When you sit, for an employee to disclose something so sensitive, you need to have their you need to have earned their trust, and they need to know that you have their back. And that is also another reason why I get to know staff. And when you actually sit down to talk to them and they disclose these things, one of the first places I refer these employees to is to Rights of Women. It's a free helpline. They can ring and seek legal advice and just to know what their options are, really. So I have had success stories when I've worked with employers in these sort of situations, but they are few and far between. In most situations, the employee ends up losing their job, either because they end up having to be relocated to another location, be it refuge, or they end up moving, or they're just not able to come back to work mm-hmm. because of the situation that they're faced with. And they end up losing their job, which is, you know, then making their situation worse. In one case, however, which is a success story I always use as an example, and this was a case during COVID where the manager called me to say, so-and-so is just not submitting their reports on time. And they were dealing with, they are in the care sector. And they were not submitting their reports on time. And the manager wanted to sit this employee down for a performance review conversation. And the manager said, do you want to just have an initial conversation quickly with this employee to just organize some dates in the diary, et cetera? I said, that's fine. Let me just talk to her. When I rang her, she immediately disclosed to me, saying something, I just feel I can talk to you openly, but this is what I'm faced with. My partner takes away my laptop and he just basically doesn't want me to remain employed. And so I really struggle to submit my reports on time. And that, as you can imagine, changed the course of the conversation. We suddenly went from a performance review discussion to offering necessary support to this employee before any sort of measures were put in place to manage her performance. So one of the solutions we put in place there was to say, right, since you're having this problem at home, how, and this is during COVID, where there were, when there were restrictions, which Peter, you know, touched upon earlier, we said, come, because we have the restriction on number of people who can be sharing a room at the moment, you know, a workspace, you can come into work every day. You will not be on the rotor as to who can come into work. You can come into work every day, work out of the office. Now, is that something you can manage given the situation with your partner? And she said, yes, I'll surely make that work. So she would come into work every day, no problems with her performance. And again, we put support systems in place for her. There was the EAP that I spoke about earlier. So she had the support of counseling, which again, she would do from work because she couldn't have counseling sessions from home. No. She would ring Rights of Women from work because she couldn't ring from home. So all of that suddenly came together. Mm. But the reason this, and today this employee, she continued to work there beyond COVID. She got rid of her partner. That problem was resolved. But like I said, that sort of success story is sadly in the minority. But the reason I really want to highlight this, the reason that was a success story, in my view, was because we started putting that framework in place before the problem arose for this employee.
Mm-hmm.
She knew that her employer had these support systems in place.
Mm-hmm.
You compare that with another client who had a similar issue with their staff. That issue only came to light when this employee couldn't come into work because she was having issues. Mm. But this client had not put the necessary measures in place by then. It was too late in the day for her to even trust any of us and have that conversation. Although I did even then refer her to Rights of Women. But unfortunately, the outcome was not what it should have been. She ended up resigning from her role. And so, yeah, so going back to your question about the charity we support Rights of Women. We run, fundraising events. I try and do at least one every year because that's all the time, sadly, I can afford. But I'd love to do more.
Yeah, I mean, it is so time consuming. I mean, you know, doing these dinner dances, I used to do them all the time when I ran the dating agency, but it's been so time consuming.
But their support, and when staff have managed to speak with somebody from Rights of Women, and the helplines are run by barristers and solicitors, family law barristers and solicitors. When staff have managed to speak with them, they come back feeling, you know, and sounding like a different person.
Fantastic.
Just confidence
to
deal with what they're faced with.
Brilliant. Well done. Thank you, Sandra. Peter, have you got a charity you support?
I have various charities. Excuse me. I have a personal charity, which is Spine Bifida and Hydrocephalia. And my son, who was born with hydrocephalia and spina bifida, unknown to me at the time, sadly passed away after six weeks. But that's one of the personal charities I support. But being a Freemason, I'm delighted to say that I'm a member of East Kent, West Kent provinces. We actually support many, many functions, particularly Masons who have issues. And I think the MFC, which is a Masonic Charity Foundation, they support various people with ailments, knee operations, all ailments, to the point of, I think East Kent have just raised £3.7 million towards that charge over a short period of time. West Kent are doing something very similar. But they also support the individuals, and I think in the last count was about 700,000 they've sponsored these individuals. So going to hospitals, making sure that they get to see a consultant, to see a doctor in time without having to queue for 12 weeks or whatever period it takes. So, yeah, so I support the MFC as well individually and also my private or, as I say, my personal through Spine Bifida.
Wow, fantastic. Rachel?
Well, bit of a charity tart, really, because there's so many charities that are doing really, really good work. You know, it's very hard to pick one specific charity, although I do prefer small charities where what you do with them is going directly to that cause and you haven't got that feeling of how much is just going to administration and not actually having who you want. I've always done a lot with Mencap for personal reasons. My brother's disabled, and animal charities. In fact, specifically the retreat, which is just down the road at High Holden, who I just read in the KM this morning. No, I didn't donate this, don't worry. But Vicky Gervais just donated £100,000 to them.
Wow.
And the work they do there is absolutely outstanding. My daughter volunteered there for ages. Our dog comes from there. The cat came from there.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, thank you. Well, before I read these shout-outs for our members, Sandra, how do people get hold of you at the HR department?
The I'm very active on LinkedIn, so just Google my look up my profile, or it's HR department westkent.co.uk. If you Google HR department West Kent as well, it's just going to come up.
Fantastic. And are you all following the Synergy LinkedIn page?
Absolutely.
Good.
Occasionally. But no, seriously, I do look at it. But please contact me through peter@pjjs.co.uk, but also visit our website, which is pjjs.co.uk.
And Rachel?
Oh, it's rachel@constantrecruitment.co.uk.
Okay.
Oh, and that's a Rachel, just R-A-C-H-E-L.
I know.
Don't put the posh version.
Well, we had someone join the Sid Cup Club and I spelt it the same way as you and she said, I've got an A. And I was like, oh, no. So, yeah, you have to watch these things. So Bethany Nightingale, our new franchisee in the CT postcode area, has said, yes, please give me a shout out, Linda. I'm donating 1 hour free personal development and wellness coaching voucher worth £70 for the punch wall from the Focused Mind for the Whitstable Networking Christmas Party tonight. Sally Marshall has said, yes, please give me a shout out. I'm donating one free full page advert in Steer Your Business magazine worth over £800. Oh, gosh, for both Whitstable and Mates Only Events. I have another gift for Whitstable. Oh, you lucky people. I thought it was just the Mates Only one. Wow, that's £1,600 that Sally Marshall is donating there. That's amazing. Sue Lee has said that she would like a shout out. She's actually donating a gift of a hypnotherapy session with her, and that can be online. And she said to me, where do you want me to send the information, Linda? And I said, I don't know. And then Hazel Hall has given us a bottle of Chapel Down wine for the Maidstone one. So that's amazing. So Hazel represents actually, she's an HR consultant for Get Ahead in the Sussex region. So not your region there at all, Sandra. And then Tracy King has said, yes, please, Linda, a free 90-minute full body, I want this one, hot stones fusion massage, incorporating Eastern and Western techniques and tailored completely to the winner of the voucher. Wow. For the punch bowl from Balance and Harmony Therapies for Maidstone Networking Christmas Party on Monday the 15th of December. So Tracy's an advanced clinical and sports massage therapist with an excellent knowledge of autonomy and physiology. She got my arm working, just so you know. She is also a Reiki master teacher and incorporates Reiki into her sessions, which is amazing. So, funnily enough, she's asked me if we're intending to expand into the East Sussex area. We're going to conquer the world, Tracy, just so you know. So I don't know which bit first, though. So before we actually close, you did say about talking about your hobbies when you're not working, Sandra. So what do you do when you're not? Because I'm intrigued now. I just want to know before we go off air.
Well, I'm sure most people, I love my back garden we were talking about earlier. So I am an avid gardener. But quite interestingly, I love dance and I love knitting.
Oh.
So, but again, I must caveat that I do manage to find, make time for knitting and gardening, but I don't manage to find the time for any dance lessons at all.
Well, you can do the other two at home with the children, can't you? But you can't do, you have to leave to do
which
the
we
dance.
Do. We definitely do.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about proper professional lessons.
Oh.
Ballroom
or?
Pardon? Yes, ballroom. And I also, this is going back a long time, but I learned Indian classical dance for nearly 10 years of my life.
Wow.
And then I graduated into ballroom dancing as well, which I loved. But I just haven't had the time to go back to it. So I do follow a lot of Strictly Come Dancing. I love that. But yeah, I'd like to be sort of just taking...
Somebody's watching Strictly then.
Somebody is watching Strictly, yes.
I absolutely love ballroom dancing. What about you, Rachel? What are your hobbies?
Oh, I wish you hadn't asked me that. I was just thinking, I hope she doesn't ask me.
Oh, have you got any?
Well, you know, busy life and all that. Yeah. I've got four dogs. That takes up a lot of the time, and cat, and chickens all got massacres, so that they've gone now. Just normal things, really. You know, I do love recruitment, so I end up spending a lot of time kind of looking at other things you can do, and you go down rabbit holes with marketing. But if I want to de-stress, I bake a cake. It's not very exciting, is it?
Oh, I'd love to be able to bake a cake. Can you bake cake, Sandra?
No, and that is why that is nicely delegated to my younger daughter.
Oh, I will share
it takes a lot of
the
patience.
Foolproof recipe with you, don't you, Ray?
I have to buy them packets with the, you know, with the sticky bits that go on the top. Yeah. Doing with the grandchildren. Peter, yeah. I know you love your garden.
Well, I was actually going to say the garden. I hadn't thought of that as a sport, but it is very much a serious hobby. I do love the garden. Particularly spring through to the autumn periods where the flowers just come out. Rhododendrons, fuchsia, all of them, very special. But in terms of sport, I do enjoy golf. I like a lot of golf. Clay pigeon shooting, do quite a bit of shooting. I haven't done skiing for a while, but again, used to really enjoy skiing. So, yeah, many activities. And I do enjoy looking after classic cars.
Ooh, that's so, a good one.
Have you got a classic car?
We've just sold a Maserati Bora, mm-hmm. and we're now looking possibly at an Austin Healey 3000 Mark III.
Oh, nice. Mm.
So, yes.
I do actually like clay pigeon shooting. I forgot about that.
Oh, really?
I have to have a shoot-off with you.
Well, it's funny the hobbies that you have. I mean, golf is quite a, you know, good one for business, isn't it? Clay pigeon shooting, two very good hobbies. I don't know if... Actually, there is a knitting circle on NetHub. Did you know?
No, I didn't.
No.
There's netting groups on NetHub.
That's very interesting.
Mm, so
But talking about golf, though, you're absolutely right. How many clients I've met through other businesses through golf? Actually playing golf, talking to people. And it's just like Freemasonry. You talk to people who you get to know, even in golf, and the work that comes out of it. Very much true.
But isn't that the same as, the, you know, I mean, golf is a networking that's been going for years. And, you know, Synergy has obviously been only just over 1 year. Yeah. But that's what networking is all about. And one of the things absolutely. I've been banging on about is it's, you know, with golf, you go every Saturday. All right.
Most times.
So, you know, what I say to my members is even if you choose one club, doesn't matter which one it is, just attend every month. It's so important. Because if you're not there in a way, I mean, for someone like Sandra, you know, to not be at Maidstone and somebody's got an HR problem and they're looking out for you and you're not there, you're noticed for not being there. Rather than notice for being there. And it would be the same for you with recruitment, probably the same for Peter with property. So, you know, it's really important, I think, when you're a member somewhere that some people say, you know, why should I go? I've got this on. Some people say to me, I'm working. And I'm like, but that.
I said that this week.
Did you?
Yeah.
Please, dear. You're but in that, Linda's bad business.
On the naughty step.
Yeah, on the naughty step. I'm going to a naughty step event tomorrow. But that, you know, for me, it's really important, I think, that people take it seriously as a marketing arm of their business. And it's not saying, right, okay, well, I'll go every third month or I'll go when this isn't happening or when that's happening. It needs to be in the diary as a consistent thing. And then they're not letting the other members down. You know, that's my perspective on it. And then also they're not letting themselves down, which is what someone said to me this morning. Because if you're not going, then you're not building those relationships, which is really important.
Linda, I have to totally agree with you. When I do go, which isn't on a regular basis, but when I do go, I get to meet various people who've got different trades, different discussions. And even today, sending yourself, I've learned quite a lot about your involvement in terms of getting interactive with individuals where HR in the past have never been interactive with yourself on recruitment. I've learned quite a lot today. So when I go to your meeting with Synergy, I get to talk to people and I understand quite a lot of that going on.
I mean, this is more in depth, isn't it? Because, you know, I think with the girls today, I think when someone runs a business as an independent, like with Rachel doing all of her blogs, you know, all of them are helpful, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Do you do blogs as well?
I do blogs. They're on my website, yes.
So, and you find with the smaller businesses that they do the things that can really help the SMEs, and if they would just go on there and read that, there's so much information given freely, whereas maybe some of the bigger businesses don't necessarily do it in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I usually do blogs after I've dealt with a very tricky situation and I pick out lessons learned from there that would be relevant to any employer out there, and that's how my blogs come about.
Mm. I mean, I actually had someone say to me the other day that he sent one of his team members along to an event, and he said that he felt that everyone knew what the others were doing, so they didn't have anything to talk about. And I was quite shocked with that comment, because obviously if you go to some networking events where they meet every week, obviously they all know what they do, because that's the whole point. You know what you do, but the point of going networking is to enhance the relationship, strengthen it, and get to know them on a deeper level. So that's asking questions. So I don't think at a networking event you should ever be in the situation where you're sitting there and thinking, well, I know what you do, Rach. I'm not going to ask you any questions. I'm not going to ask you if you've had a good week, or, you know, who you've been working with this week, because I already know everything about your business.
Yeah.
So, yeah, some of the things people have been putting to me since I've been running my own networking business.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I suppose because I've been networking for over 25 years, and people would say things to me, and sometimes it would go a little bit over my head because it wasn't my business, but it means so much more to me now. I want to try and make it better.
Mm. Yeah, very much so.
Okay, look, thank you so much, all of you. I'm just going to let you all say again how people can get hold of you. So, Peter?
Through pjjs.co.uk or peter@pjjs.co.uk. Please come and make contact with us.
Brilliant.
We are looking for a block and estate manager.
Great. Okay. I should have got you to tell us what the qualities they need. Rachel?
At constantrecruitment.co.uk.
Fantastic. And Sandra?
HRdepartmentwestken.co.uk or sandhya.iyer@hrdept.co.uk.
That's brilliant. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. And we look forward to seeing the people at the event this evening and at the walk on Friday. Synergy Networking Events, first events, launch on the 6th of January 2026. And the next show that I'm doing, actually, is a show with Jill Russell and with John Turner, our two other presenters on this show. And we're all coming together on the 30th of this month to do a sort of pre-New Year's Eve show. And we always have such a laugh and good fun on there. So please do listen in if you've got nothing to do on there. But it's bye for now, and have an amazing week in business.
Hello, Kent Business. Events that don't deliver, Synergy Networking Events has got you covered. Whether you're a networking newbie or a seasoned pro, our events make networking a breeze. Meet other businesses without the pressure. Enjoy pre-planned seating table moves and even a buffet. All for just £20 for non-members and £10 for members. Build relationships that last and get a result on your investment. Looking to grow your network and your business? Discover Simply Business Club, where connections turn into conversations. We're not your average networking group. At Simply Business Club, we offer conversational networking. Each meeting gives everyone 3 to 4 minutes to share their stories in open discussions, filled with insights and even testimonials for work done. It's more than networking. It's building relationships that work for you. Join Simply Business Club today. Visit simplybusinessclub.co.uk or call 01843 627 001 to find out how you can be part of our vibrant business community. Simply Business Club, where businesses meet conversations.
You've been listening to the Business Networking Show with Linda Cloke, John Turner, and Jill Russell.